We've made a wrong turn, and and we are stuck outside of Derry, Maine, and it's snowing outside, and there's red fungus everywhere, and I'm pretty sure it's an alien invasion. This is the Wrong Turn Podcast.
Not 100%.
Not 100% sure. I was a little confused towards the end there. Welcome, everybody, to the Wrong Turn Podcast. My name is Edgar with your host, Courtney, over here.
Hello.
I call her Count Court. And this is a show where we talk about horror movies. We laugh at the bad ones, we analyze the good and the not so good, and we ask what were they thinking oftentimes, and we also try to see if we can make them better in some sort of weird, you know, general hypothesis scenario. So if you love horror movies, because we are armchair experts. And so if you love horror movies, you've made a wrong turn and you are in the right place. Welcome. Hi, Courtney. How's it going?
Hi, Edgar. That was a great intro.
Oh, thanks. Today, we are talking about Stephen King's Dreamcatcher from 2003. I already told Courtney the last time about I have a little bit of history with this movie, and that back in high school, my friends went to see it without me at the fancy mall in town, and and I felt left out. So for years I had FOMO until I actually saw this movie for the first time years later. And I was like, oh, I didn't miss anything.
You're like, oh, just like wish my friends would have invited me, but this movie sucks.
Oh no, I was invited. I was always invited. And they're still my best friends till this day. So we still talk. You know, I'm the godfather of his, you know, one of my friend's kids. Like, but it's, we'll always go back to like this movie was not great in the oeuvre of like movies that we had watched together.
It's not great.
It's not great. We'll get into maybe why. The initial thoughts, Courtney, from your favorite movie of all time, Dreamcatcher.
Before we want to jump into initial thoughts, I think we should probably say happy 2025. And then also, I mean, we're kind of touched on it here. It's very grim outside for me right now. At the time of record, Los Angeles is on fire. The Palisades, Santa Monica, Malibu, not West Hollywood, but parts of Hollywood. There's a lot of wildfires happening, and luckily I'm safe where I live. I'm good. But when I say it's grim outside, it is black because there is ash everywhere. Sorry, a squirrel. I left an apple outside for just took it. So that's great. Sorry.
Squirrel.
Literally squirrel. I left them an apple and they took it. But yeah. So again, I'm safe. All of my friends that lived in that area have evacuated, unfortunately. But I went to the pier last night after dark, and you can just see it burning. It was kind of a really, I don't know, surreal experience. It's just, yeah. And now today, the sky is like, it's dark.
Yeah, real life horror. Los Angeles is burning. So if you got friends out there, reach out to them. I've been seeing a bunch of Instagram messages, people checking on each other, people evacuating. This is the closest I think
this is close.
Of all my times there, like this is the closest it's been to any place I was living previously. I mean, when I was living in the Bay Area, but at the time we didn't have any crazy wildfires. It's mm-hmm. definitely stopped us from going places before. A couple years ago when we wanted to go to a trip, we couldn't because the roads were closed. Hopefully, you know, March, April comes by and then we get a little bit of moisture and a little bit of rain in that area. But right now it's looking kind of bad. Like, is there any news on what the city's doing, or like how, if it's getting better?
I have the app that they like have want us to all download of based on like when you should evacuate, what kind of danger you're in or whatever. And right now the area I'm in is just for red flag, which just means like the pollution, like, you know, please stay indoors if you can. But we are in no way have to worry about evacuating. They're containing some of them, but right now the winds are terrible. Like, I don't know, like, the, I mean, obviously the timing of that winds just make the fires worse, but it is so windy yesterday and it is so windy today. So I'm not really sure. Like, right now they're just kind of containing. They're starting to evacuate parts of Santa Monica. And that was kind of like a holy shit moment where I was like, oh no.
Yeah.
Like, but right now just trying to contain it.
So are they telling you to stay inside in your area?
Yeah, they're saying if you can, just because it's like, it's gnarly outside. I went out on my rooftop this morning just to check and there was ash all over our rooftop. And I was like, oh, wow. Like, even when I was going to think about go for my walk this morning, I'm like, maybe not. Or like, I should have a mask on, like, if I'm going to go run around and do things today.
Yeah. Just to go, go get the things you need, like just a little emergency supply run for sure. And you try to stay home if you can.
Yeah.
I mean, are the stores open?
Yeah. Like, stores are open. There isn't, again, where I am, there isn't a panic or anything. I think people are just, like you said, getting your supplies, making sure that you're okay, like checking on people. I know a couple of people in my neighborhood have already are housing evacuees. And hopefully they can contain it quickly. But all I know, because it's really bad in the Palisades. The Palisades high school burned down.
Oh, snap.
And right now, you know this. Remember, we went to the Getty Villa together. The villa itself is fine, but the grounds have burnt down. All of the work is still safe. They've said, like, look, everything is still safe inside the building. But, yeah, the grounds of the Getty Villa have been burnt down.
I mean, I bet.
Like a reference. Like, we've been to the Getty Villa.
No, I bet. I mean, I bet they're like part of that place is ready for a fire.
Oh, yeah. Like, so they like probably took everything and put it into a secure spot.
Yeah. Like fireproof box container, like under 7 levels deep into the ground, because I'm sure they're prepared for it. Because we were like doing like the general math of like all that they have probably $1 billion worth of artwork, you know, in those two locations alone. Like it's, I'm sure they have the money to safeguard a lot of those priceless works and artifacts, just the artifacts alone.
Yeah.
Well, I'm hoping the best for you. Hopefully you don't have to leave, and hopefully this gets resolved quickly. Cause I mean, like, this is, from what I remember, like, this is the closest it's gotten to like a major city in the last few years.
Well, that's why when I was like, when they started evacuating parts of Santa Monica, that's when I was like really kind of sitting with it. And I'm like, well, what? Like, and I'm only laughing just because that's like a comfort thing for me. Cause it's hard to register. When I'm watching the videos of people on PCH trying to evacuate, and the fires are getting so bad, they're telling people to get out of their car and just kind of go to the beach until they can try and contain it. And everyone has their dogs and everything. And I'm like, what? This is just up the coast. Like, this isn't that far. Luckily, where I'm at, there's a lot of like concrete and a lot of things would have to burn through. So that's what I mean when we're not really in, I'm not in like an immediate danger, but of course we need to always be prepared.
No, I'm looking at a map right now. No, this is really close for you. Like, and there's 3 fires. There's one of the Palisades, there's a Hearst fire, and then there's an Eaton fire. So basically like 3 edges of national parks are on fire, and they do surround Los Angeles. Mm-hmm. Like,
yeah. Check on your friends, everyone. It's Like I said, everyone that I know that lives up in that area has evacuated, even if they didn't have to at the moment. They're just for peace of mind, obviously, getting out of there.
No, it's three at the same time. That's kind of bizarre. Like, I guess just like embers from one, like, started the other ones, I guess.
Well, and then it being dry and it being insanely windy right now. Like, I'll have to send you the video I took last night from Hermosa Pier where we were watching just basically the mountains burn. And you could, when the wind picked up, you could see it start to move. And I was like, fuck. Like...
Like, to give people like a little bit of context that aren't from like the West Coast, like these parks are right on the edge of Los Angeles. It's not even like this is out of the way. Like, these are right there. This is kind of, I knew it was bad, but I didn't know it was this bad. And it is not far from you. That is less than an hour, Courtney. That is very, very close. I feel feel like stopping the recording and like maybe you should just head to Mexico, head to San Diego.
Driving. No, I mean, we're prepared. We're prepared. But it's right now they're telling us that seems really unlikely it would get this far. But it is a wildfire. So
no, it would have to go through Santa Monica, which
you have to go through Santa Monica, through Venice, through
that's a huge I mean Marina, like you said, that's Del a lot Rey. Of yeah.
Like it seems unlikely, but you can't just say it won't happen.
Yeah. No, but
you are correct. It is less than an hour away.
Yeah, that's huge. That's huge. I guess, I mean, I hate to, well, that's the real life horror update from Courtney. Jesus.
I was like, wait a second. I I'm okay, everyone. I am. Like, we still have power, obviously. Still have internet. I'm very grateful for that. But, yeah, it's.
Different spin on a dry January, huh?
Yeah.
All right.
It's okay. We need jokes. We do need a little laughter. let's jump back into Dreamcatcher. What a
well real quick. Have you been watching anything recently? Before we get into, I always like to do these little updates, seeing what we're watching, anything new, anything interesting, you know.
The most recent one I watched, and I did like a little video of it, was The Tunnel, because I know I mentioned it. Did you actually watch it?
No, I didn't get a chance to. Okay. I'm completely spaced on it.
No worries. I uploaded a quick little video of it on our Instagram and on our TikTok if anyone wants to check that out. But it is a good mix of Blair Witch Project and The Descent, which just happened to be two of some of my favorite movies. It's really low budget because you can, and I want to say that because you need to give it the space of that, because with a low budget film, there's a lot of the scenes we're in these tunnels, and because they're looking for what the government is covering up in these abandoned tunnels, because like they think homeless people are living down there and they're trying to find evidence because the government is just like, no, no one lives down there. Don't worry about it. And they're like, no, like there's something going on down there. And of course they find things. And when I say like with it being low budget, it's because you don't really get to see a lot of the action. Like you do get to see the outlines of the creatures and a little bit of like the facial structure, but they build the suspense really well. Very similar to like they did in Blair Witch Project. You're kind of like, wait, what's happening? Like, you know, there's a lot of off camera things. And of course they're running around in the dark tunnel. Like that's terrifying in itself.
Oh no, super, like Descent creeped me out, as above so below freaked me out. Like anytime it's like dark and it's a tunnel and it's just like claustrophobic, yeah, that That freaks me. Because again, it's very relatable. It's very close to real life horror, like 100%. If your brother or sister ever held you down underneath a bed sheet, kind of freak you out. Like, is this an Australian film?
The Australian film from 2011, I think it is.
100% on Rotten Tomatoes. Courtney discovered a gem here. We love this because just like a little 2011, that's this movie's like what, 13, 14 years old now? Like that is great. So I've never heard of this movie before. A film crew learns of a government cover-up about an abandoned train tunnels beneath the heart of Sydney and decides to go inside to try to find the truth. Very quickly, the group begins to realize that perhaps the cover-up was for a good reason. Dun, dun, dun.
Ooh. I won't. One thing I will say, it's not very quickly. the beginning does lag a bit, so I don't know, very quickly, like once it gets going, yeah, you're there, which is great, but there was like the first, you know, half hour, 45 minutes, I was like, okay, but then again, Blair Witch Project does that too.
You got to change that tagline then. Like, slowly the group begins to realize.
I don't know. Very quickly is like the best.
After 45 minutes, the group starts to realize that they're just covered up for a good reason.
Like, once they're down in the tunnel, yeah, things be happening. But, like, it takes a while.
It kind of reminded me, like, anytime, because I recently just, watched again Midnight Meat Train.
Oh, with Bradley Cooper?
Yeah. I thought I'd watched this before.
It's been a while. It has another notable actor, right?
Like the big Vinny British guy? Jones.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Who doesn't talk at all.
Okay, well, he is British.
Well, I mean, no, he does. He like there's a reason why his character doesn't talk at all and stuff like that.
But I can't remember. But I remember liking that. And it was before Bradley Cooper got real, real big. Like before Bradley Cooper, like, was, you know, Oscar Bradley Cooper.
Yeah, he was still pretty good. Like it's a pretty good movie. It's a good midnight watch. It kind of goes off the rails towards the end because I'm just like, they start throwing all this other stuff at you and you're just like, oh, okay. Because it goes for the longest time, you're just like, oh, Vinnie Jones is just a serial killer. And I'm just like, okay. But then when it gets to the ending, like kind of like the twists and the turns, I'm like, okay, this kind of went bonkers. I kind of like it. It's not an awful movie.
But you're right. Tunnel adjacent because there's like obviously it's the underground that they're on.
And I think. Oh, it's right. It was a Clive Barker story. I thought it was a Stephen King joke. I was going to try to go a loop around. Well, I was going to try to put it together. I'm not going to give it away if nobody's ever seen Midnight Meat Train. It's actually a pretty good watch.
Decent.
The effects are good. They throw some really, really other special effects towards the end in there, which were really fun. And then at the end, you're just like, oh, Jesus. But there's a reason why Vinnie Jones doesn't talk in the movie.
I can't remember the reason. Just save it.
It's a Clive Barker short story that appears in the Books of Blood, Volume 1. And since we're talking about books, we're going to segue into our movie today, fucking Dreamcatcher from 2003.
Okay. Yeah. And you asked for my initial thoughts, so here you go.
Yes, please.
I did not give it a rewatch, even though we decided to do this one, because I watched it back in November with one of my best friends, Lou, when I was visiting her for Thanksgiving. Because this was one that we did watch, I think, when we were teenagers. I think I mentioned that we would watch the movie Slither a lot. The James Gunn Slither.
Yeah, it's a good one. He's It's fun.
Yeah, that movie's fantastic, and we loved that movie. So I think with Dreamcatcher, it's a little like, because there's like creepy little like slimy aliens, even though the CGI is awful. Like really bad. And then I also felt like it was just a couple different movies in one. Like the Morgan Freeman part of the story is like the military part of the story. You never really, I wish there would have been a little bit more of the background on that, because allegedly like Morgan Freeman's been chasing the same alien for like fucking years or whatever. And I wanted to say, I know I watched this too young, because arguably the most thrilling scene, I guess, is the bathroom scene, because it is the most like, you know, when they first find what the creature is and it's like taken its first victim that we get to see, I guess. That scene traumatized me because I remember it completely different. Because when we did the rewatch, I was like, oh, not that bad. But for some reason, as a kid, I was like, I thought the like bloody bathroom, like blown out butthole, like I was like, I was traumatized by it. I was like, I think it's part of like my bathroom trauma. Like I cannot stand a dirty bathroom. Like, and yeah, I pinpoint it to that movie too.
I mean, a dirty bathroom is fair. It's yeah. it's very relatable.
It's fair, to like, but this movie didn't help. But I also like, yeah, I don't know. It's just, I wish there was more alien, more backstory with Duddits and the kids, like where they got their powers. Now I know it's a book, and I need to read the book, and I probably will. And we all know that like book to movie adaptations don't really ever work, especially when you're dealing with Stephen King. I mean, come on.
All important notes that we're gonna hit on today, 100%.
Now you just recently watched this, so
yeah, I watched it because I couldn't remember part of it, and I know why. Like you said, like the first half of this movie, a lot of people like the first half of the movie.
Yeah,
where it's very Stand By Me, it's very Losers Club. You got a group of friends that have not only do they have the bond of friendship and growing up together, they have the bond of telepathy.
Yeah,
they're psychic. They have a psychic link with them, and of course Duddits. So like these friends are basically on another level. And of course they're at the cabin at the hole in the wall, and it's all very charming and endearing, and like it, top fucking actors, every one of them.
Yes.
But one of the things that kind of annoyed me a little bit, and I don't know if it's just the book to movie translation or they're trying to stay too close to home, where it's just that there are too many Stephen King-isms, right? They're all the characters have like their little quirks and their little sayings and the way they talk. And it just takes you out of the movie for me at one point. What was it? So, well, let's look at these list of characters,
the
right?
Dialogue is interesting. That I'll give you that.
But some of the delivery is really good, right?
Yes, so you have like Jason Lee, who's fantastic.
Thank you. That's what I was looking at. It's exactly what I was trying to think of.
Yeah.
Jason Lee's really good at delivering his lines because it's very believable, and he's very much, you know, that heel and that funny guy character, Beaver. So like he is the most believable as far as his acting, because he's just being a little shit. But of course, every time he says "fuck me, Freddy," I'm like, ugh, fuck. Like, nobody says "fuck me, Freddy." You know, like what the fuck? Like first time, fine. Second or third time, I'm like, all right. Do you have no other line? Like Thomas Jane going to the whole Mighty Mouse thing, because like that's what they used to say when they were little kids. I'm like, dude, how old are you guys? You guys are like,
we're going too far into like the nostalgia of these. Yeah.
Too far. Like you guys, I get it. You guys are best friends, but you guys have been best friends forever. And like, I doubt you're going to say the same lines all the time forever. Mm-hmm. Like you guys hang out on a regular basis.
Yes.
Basically. He writes, But of course, in a book, it might be a little bit more different. What was the other? Oh, fucking Morgan Freeman, right?
Yes.
He great fucking actor. At this point, he's already at the top of his fucking game, right? He's well known for doing all sorts of shit. He does this, which is a partial B plot antagonist. The general or whatever for the military, but this whole Bucky boy laddie sort of thing, like Bucko, like he's got his own lingo for everything. I'm like, what the fuck? Like, what are you saying?
What are you saying?
And that is the
part that took me out of this movie. Like whenever we would jump to like the Morgan Freeman and him doing that with the other officer that he's like training or whatever, just like, okay.
It's a little weird. It takes you out of it. Like it's too many Stephen King-isms, right? A lot of people think whole, some of the
concentration camp, like,
dude. He's not supposed to be a good guy, right? And he's going off the rails, and he's literally just out the door. It's like his last day before retirement is actually like basically what is happening.
He's like, after this, it's finally time for me to set down my. Or you're like, dude. You need to get out of here now. You're just
low key was kind of like a love story between him and like Tom Sizemore. is he giving him the reins or is like he in love with Tom Sizemore? Because it makes sense.
I can't tell.
I can't tell. You're a really good actor, Morgan Freeman.
I think he wants to be with him.
I think he wants to be with him. Like he just wants to watch him kill aliens. He's just kind of really fucking weird.
Getting off on it.
100%.
And, like, was deeply upset when he, like, turned on.
Oh, 100%. Like a lover would be. And on Tom Sizemore's part, he's just like, oh, you're giving me the reins? Oh, my God. It looked intense. Yeah, it looked like a real genuine connection between two men in the military.
Which... has happened, continues to happen.
It could have happened. It could have been it. It could have been the C plot line.
You know what? You're right. They should have given us a gay love story.
I'm just saying, like,
you're not wrong. You're not wrong.
But I'm just all right. All star cast. Dreamcatcher from 2003. I think it is a 33% on Rotten Tomatoes, 28% on Rotten Tomatoes right now, I think.
Yeah.
Pretty low, but we love it because we love a good bad movie to talk about. All-star cast. Fucking Thomas Jane, Jason Lee, Damian Lewis, Timothy Olyphant, fucking Morgan Freeman again, like I said, as the second villain, supporting villain. Get the fuck out of here. Like,
yeah, Tom you got Sizemore. Morgan Freeman in your movie.
Yeah. And Donnie Wahlberg, you know, as Duddits. Unrecognizable. Which,
my good God. Like,
unrecognizable.
Talk about the Tropic Thunder. What's the way we're like with Steven?
The Tropic Thunder.
Where like it's just as Ben Stiller in the Tropic Thunder, what Robert Downey Jr. says to him. It's like, dude, you never go full.
You never go full.
But, oh boy, did Donnie Wahlberg go full.
Yeah. Now, the Duddits child character.
Great.
Love. Amazing.
Fantastic.
Loved everything about him. You know, no notes.
No notes. Amazing.
For those people who don't know, a group of friends go to a cabin in the woods who share a psychic link together, come across an alien invasion, for lack of a better, you know, explanation, is basically the gist of the Stephen King book. A little bit of history on the book. Stephen King wrote this Well, the book came out in 2001. In 1999, Stephen King got hit by a car, which he's talked about many times, and he's actually put it in a couple times in this book. Not in this book, in his several of his books.
Yeah.
Like completely fractured, I think, like his hip and his pelvis, and I think one of his legs were, as he described it, marbles in a bag. Like he was jacked up. They thought he was going to die.
Yeah.
So then when he wrote this book, it got optioned for a film immediately. I could see why, you know, like, oh my God, we lost almost one of like the greatest authors of all time.
You got to jump on this immediately.
Oh my God. We got to, doesn't matter what it is. Don't read the book.
It's just Stephen King after, because thinking, yeah, I mean, I get the thinking where you're like, yeah, this has got to be a great one. And then all of a sudden you're like, shit, we jumped the gun.
yeah, shit is right. He wrote this long form because he couldn't sit at a desk for a too long period of time. Also, I'm like, no laptops in 1999, but like, I'm like, but regardless. So he wrote it long form. We've talked about it. First half of this book, or first half of this movie, great connection, great world building. Second half of this movie goes a little bit off the rails. Just to show you the difference in the pace of the movie, we don't get to Morgan Freeman until about the 45-minute mark in this movie. So you go a whole almost movie establishing this whole world, and then all of a sudden you're introduced to this whole military outfit, and you're just like, what the fuck? And it just goes off the rails because it just keeps going and it keeps escalating where he's got people in concentration and he's going so fast. You're like, if you don't pay attention, you're missing a lot of it because again, of his fucking lingo and whatnot.
Sorry.
Let's see. It grossed worldwide $75 million out of a $68 million budget. 33 of those million dollars were domestic. So it was a little bit of a flopperino.
Just a little.
That's actually not great for back then. But like I said, all-star cast, the effects, a little bit. Mind you, great cast, great production team. We talked about the cinematographer John Seale in one of our other previous podcasts. Homie was a cinematographer for this movie too. You know, it looks great. The cinematography,
just, the CGI is like so awful.
It's 2003. That's one thing I actually didn't look up. I was just like, I'm always over. But it's 2003. It looks okay for the time, but they have a lot of these highlights everywhere on the alien creatures that just like feel unnatural because the little shit snake or whatever the fuck it's called.
Shit snake. Pretty good.
It's just so glossy. So glossy it's everywhere.
Very,
you're like,
it's very glossy. And then I don't know.
Where's this light coming from?
I will give them this though. The eggs, like individual eggs that they made, which were practical, that were not CGI, those were dope. Those were nasty.
Look great. So directed by Lawrence Kasdan and co-written by Kasdan and William Goldman. Again, all-star team. These guys directed and wrote some of the most popular movies ever fucking made. So like you said, again, Stephen King comes out of his accident. He writes the first book because everybody thought he was gonna go. They get an all-star cast, they get an all-star team, and this movie is still a fucking piece of shit.
Still, it can't even be recovered. But again, not at the fault of the actors. They did their job. They did.
And of course, there's always that talk about like a book to movie adaptation is really hard to do. They try to put too much of the book into the movie, and they try to simplify some other aspects for brevity, and you just lose it in translation. Mm-hmm. And I'll get to some of those parts, but I'm just like, that's happened a lot with Stephen King books. I mean, I don't know. Shawshank Redemption, I think they probably put a lot of the book into the movie, and it just worked really, really well. Maybe it's because it's not genre, it's more of a drama. But with The Shining is a complete, like, based also, on. Like, no.
Yeah, but I also think, like, with those books to movie adaptations, it's a little bit more controlled because it's the one location. And then this one, maybe that's why, but like with this one, it's just like maybe the fault of trying to put too much of the book into the movie. Again, I haven't read the book, so I don't know. But everyone, as I've spoken to about this, has said, like, read the book. Like, I think you will enjoy the book. But it's a long book. It's a really big book. I know that.
He does these sprawling giant books, which is like, because you just got a lot to write. And it's in one of his other interviews I was looking, is like, it's writing his addiction. He used to suffer from addiction to alcohol and drugs, so like he needs to write. And I actually get that. I do see a lot of people that suffer from addiction have to trade up one thing for another.
Swapping addictions is the thing.
Which is great. It's given us some amazing movies.
Yeah.
And give it us to talk about.
You know? It works best, especially if you are a person that does have that addictive personality, to switch it to a healthier habit, as i.e. writing.
So much better than how I phrased it. Yes.
I mean, no, I only know this because I am one of those people. Like, I consider myself a sober. Like, I don't drink alcohol anymore. And then after I quit drinking alcohol, I did smoke pot for quite a while, but then I stopped doing that because I realized like my anxiety was getting really, really bad. And I'm like, oh, I don't think I can do this anymore. And then now I sit here and I'm like, yeah, I can't be doing that anymore. I have to be focusing on healthier habits. Like, now I'm a runner and I paint and I'm like, who am I? But I'm happy. But it's been like, I understand that part of it as like the addictive tendencies. I don't know. I feel like sometimes too, when someone says like, oh, I'm sober, there's like this immediate, like, negative connotation around it. And I'm like, no. Like, everyone's rock bottom looks very, very different. And I feel like a lot of people just think like, oh, you must have been in a ditch, like drunk and like with a needle in your arm. And I'm like, no. Like,
yeah.
I don't know. It's not like that. Sometimes you just realize that you need to start making better decisions. And that was like my case.
That's fair. It's 100%. That's fair. So in Stephen King's case, he likes writing books and he writes these giant books, which might be a little bit hard to interpret sometimes to film, which is great, it's fine because I think those two things should be separate. I think a book and a movie should totally be separate. They're two different experiences. And I don't want my movie to be exactly like my book, because then why did I read the book for? Like, you know?
And I agree with that too, because I like the adaptations. I like being like, oh yeah, that could, but separate them. This is the book. This is the movie. They're going to be different. So I don't like it when people are always like, but it's nothing like the book. It's like, relax and please accept this form of art as its own.
So then, yeah, in this case, I think they were trying to make it too much like the book.
Okay.
Half of it's – yeah. And they lose it just because – and then they try to wrap everything up and they try to condense everything. They try to wrap everything up, streamline everything, and they try to narrow everything down so you don't get these – like you said, these in-depth background stories, the emotional connection between the friends. You do get that, but I mean, like, or like the history of the villains or the aliens, or how some of it's a little bit more ambiguous in the book, because you can do that. And in the movie, it's just flat out because it's a visual medium, so you need to show everybody. Mm-hmm. You can show ambiguity in a movie. You just got to let your audience be, you know, let them be smart enough to accept it for what it is.
Yes. That's a good way to put it. Like, you have to let your audience take control and trust that, and just kind of trust your audience. And that is a hard thing to do, especially with a mainstream thing. And you know, of course, it's movie making. People want to make money.
I get it. That's fine. Let's talk about some of his worst adaptations, because there have been a lot of them. Objectively, this is a list of like the top 10 of some of his worst book adaptations. Let's see. Lawnmower Man. Have you ever seen that one from 1992?
Yes. I like Lawnmower Man.
We can talk about that one. Lawnmower Man, there is a director's cut of Lawnmower Man, which apparently is better.
Director's cut.
Yeah, I might have been the first time I saw a woman's nipple on TV.
Oh, so you just saying? Yeah, you have a very.
Oh, I remember Lawnmower Man.
Like, oh, I was there.
Oh, I was there. The Dreamcatcher, of course, is up there. Maximum Override, which I would not say is a bad book adaptation. I would say it's pretty good.
Maximum Overdrive.
Oh, it's super fun, you know. It, directed by Stephen King and probably a coke-fueled, like, manic.
Coke? I think that's why it's so great, because he probably was fucking fucked up on coke.
Oh, 100%. You can watch the intro of Maximum Override with Overdrive with Stephen King, and you're like, I think he's coked up right now, like, in this intro. Like,
I can see it in his face. Yeah, that's not correct. Maximum Overdrive, I think, is top five.
I love Maximum. Cell from 2016 with John Cusack and who was the other guy? Was it Morgan Freeman again?
I don't think I've seen that one.
Not great. Not to be confused with The Cell by Tarsem with Jennifer Lopez and Vincent D'Onofrio, which is a great movie.
That is a great movie. But definitely not a Stephen King. So yes, do not get confused.
I feel kind of. I'm sorry. It wasn't Morgan Freeman or Lawrence Fishburne. It was Samuel L. Jackson. My bad.
Ooh.
I don't even. There is some parts in The Cell that are, in the book that are kind of cool that I think they left out of the movie. But yeah, that's we're not here, neither here nor there. 2017's Dark Tower. I recently rewatched it
because
I wanted to see how bad it was. Stephen King has his dark fantasy series of books called the Dark Tower series. Number one, I think, is called The Wastelands or whatever. This is the first one. They were going to do all of them. Like, again, it's Stephen King. They give it all the money. It's his gunslinger is a very famous character. He finished a series of books 2009, 2010, or something like that. Like, he spent 30 years writing these books because it's his fantasy magnum opus, right? Mm-hmm. And they cross bleed with some of his other books and whatnot. Awful adaptation. Fucking awful. Spent so much money world building and like characters and costumes and things like that. It looks great for the first half. And I think they feel like they ran out of money for like the last 30 minutes.
Scrambling.
Wrap it up. Wrap it up. Quick. Shoot.
Fix it in post.
Oh my God. And they changed it completely. They changed the ending completely, which was just like, you ruined it, because that's the point of the book and the point of this character is very dark. And the ending of that book was just like, it hit so hard for that first one that you're just like, oh yeah, this main character is a piece of shit. And then Matthew McConaughey was the bad guy, was his famous bad guy known as the Man in Black. And Idris Elba was his other famous character known as the Gunslinger. And they just fucking ruined that one.
Wow. And those are names too.
Those are all the money. Mm-hmm. That movie had to have cost like probably like $150 million or $200 something like that. Like, all right. Number six, Firestarter with Drew Barrymore.
No, I haven't seen that one.
Oh, I'm sorry. No, this is the 2022 remake is on this list. I didn't watch the remake, a reboot. I don't know if we need to, but I think it was also a sequel. Yeah. Moving on to number seven, Sleepwalkers from 1992.
I remember Sleepwalkers.
Not a bad movie.
It's okay. For
1992. Weird movie. A lot of mommy and son kind of really close, you know what I mean?
Yeah, that's a little uncomfortable.
Yeah, those are some of the other ones. I want to add to this one, Langoliers.
Yes. Okay, I was waiting for you to get to that one. I was like,
Langoliers
on here.
The CG in Langoliers is pretty bad.
The CG, but I do remember liking it. But it is one of his like super duper fucking long ones.
And Langoliers and the other one I was gonna mention was Tommyknockers are made for TV, so they're not great.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, Langoliers was Tommyknockers, I think, was like a series. So it's like several episodes. Langoliers, I think, is just one long movie.
It is, because I remember, because my mom is a big Stephen King fan. So whenever they had the made for TV adaptations, so I distinctly remember Langoliers, and like it felt like forever until we got to see the things. And then once you did, it was like, oh, really? Like, that's it? They're just, like, going down the hill, like, chomp, 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 chomp. Like,
chomp, chomp. Yeah, it's just big fucking Pac-Man, like, on the side. Pac-Man. You're fucking Pac-Man. It's all it was. It's 100%.
They're just Pac-Man. Yeah. And I'm like, oh, that's it?
Yeah.
And the other made-for-TV one that I remember, which was a good, was it is it The Stand?
The Stand is supposed to be up there. The Stand, I haven't seen the TV adaptation in years since. Oh.
Because remember Rob Lowe is in it, and his character doesn't talk.
Oh, they did two remakes. They did Yeah. I think there's two versions. But in
The original made for TV one
was the older one. Mm-hmm. And then in 2020, they redid it.
Yeah.
Which I don't think anybody watched.
Nobody talked
about it. I don't remember anybody talking about this at all. It's got a huge cast again. Super huge cast.
So maybe that deserves a watch, because I do like the original. I really do.
Well, maybe I got to rewatch the old one. Oh, I did. I think I did remember seeing some parts, like Whoopi Goldberg is in the remake.
I didn't even know that.
Let's see here. Yeah, it was canceled. I don't think they even finished it.
Bummer. Probably because it's one of those where you're like, we can just leave that one alone.
I mean, it was a good. I don't think it's one of those things. Like, it's such a drama. I don't think it needed to be remade. Like,
no.
This whole thing of like, everybody was really happy with the first It. I mean, the second remake of It was, or the remake of It was good. But I felt like for us, since it hit us at such a pivotal time when we were so young, like it was a super scary show or TV series, and like it's really hard to capture that essence again.
It is. And
so like, yeah,
the fact that you only see the Tim Curry Pennywise for what, like 12 minutes on screen in total, like he's really not in it that much, but we remember it so vividly. We remember that motherfucker so vividly.
Rewatching I'm like, oh, this is bad, and this is not a great. It's so much scarier in my head or in my memories.
Yeah.
Rewatching, I'm like, oh, this was what I was scared of? This is fucking TV. This is just like a show.
I was like terrified of drain pipes, drain entryways. Yeah. I was like, absolutely 100%. Not. Yeah. Once again, right, my mother, who was watching this, like, I don't know how old I was, but I remember it. I was like, fucking his teeth. Like, oh. Now, the Bill Skarsgård one is good. Like, I do like it. But yes, I don't feel the same way about it.
No, it's fun and it's entertaining and it's really well done, and I like the reinterpretation of some of the monster aspects, and he is creepy in some aspect. Like, I really try to up it, but like I said, like, we're
dude has like one of the most defining faces right now, and I'm glad that he really, you know, roots for the horror. Like, that's his thing. Like, I mean, I haven't seen Nosferatu yet, but whenever I watch him in interviews, I just find him really relatable. And I'm like, you know what? Good for him. I'm happy that he's out here, like, leading the horror way. Because he has for years, 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 years. I remember him in Hemlock Grove.
Hemlock Grove was fun.
Yeah.
You know, I don't think I saw season 3, but I'm like, oh, yeah, they're going for it. They're really, really going for it. I think they were trying to put in all the monsters in it, like Penny Dreadful, where they were trying to put in all the monsters in it. Like, yeah. Fucking see what sticks to the wall. Fucking yeah, because I remember that first season pretty well. I'm like,
and it was an Eli Roth produced too. So
oh yeah, we talked about that.
He put his name on it, so that made me be like, ooh, like. But it wasn't enough gore for Eli, but that's okay.
Well, it's also like Netflix, and it's like Netflix. I think Some of it was they're teen characters. They're in high school.
Exactly. So there's still and a little like the romanticize of the like sexy werewolf, a sexy vampire. So yeah. But it's well done.
There's a little Twilight sparkle like sprinkled in. Mm-hmm. You know, like they needed to add to it.
We were still in that realm of Twilight, like we were still coming off of that. Which I never understood. I know I don't get the Twilight movies. I understand we make fun of them now, but I was like, holy shit, how are these like so popular? But you know, whatever.
We weren't the demographic for it. We were not. And I was surprised that some of my friends read all the books and I'm like, Danny, you're reading all the Twilight books? What? Like, Danny, you're 25. What the fuck are you doing reading all the Twilight books? Like, I'm like, all right, man. I'm like, I mean, but he was also my friend. He was a huge reader, so he read everything. So fair.
Which is fine. Twilight, I don't get it.
Let's get back to this movie.
Shitty movie, Dreamcatcher?
All right, the parts that did work, yes.
Okay.
Toilet shit monster worked for me.
Yes.
100%.
The eggs worked.
But all right, so Stephen King in one of his interviews says, I hope this movie does for the toilet what the shower did for Psycho, right? Now, he said that, which is a great line.
I like that.
Because he was really trying to like – what's scary? What's something in the home that he hasn't really touched on before?
What so he's is
like,
relatable? Fuck the bathroom. What is vulnerable? What is vulnerable for us as humans? Taking a shit.
Great. Taking a shit. I also think I manifested a shit monster the other day because I was just like, I went to the bathroom and I've been on this kind of clean diet for like the last week. And I'm like, that looks a lot like the movie.
That's impressive what I just did.
I was like, that looks a lot like the movie. And I think
looks better than those CGI shit worms.
I've been thinking about this fucking movie for too long for the last week, and it's just embedded itself in my fucking psyche. Now I'm literally just manifesting shit monsters. And I've dreamed about cabins and snow for the last three nights, and I'm just like, I am over this fucking movie. Like, I want it out of my fucking brain.
Yo, it really infiltrated your brain.
I don't know. I have no idea. Done it.
What's your subconscious trying to tell you?
SSDD, which I'm like, okay, cool. And the whole like SSDD thing, yeah. I'm like, you could just say same shit different day. You know, like it's.
I wish they would have. I wish it just would have been same shit, different day.
Also, they're not like construction workers. They're like one's a professor.
One's a doctor, right?
Yeah.
Like
one's a I don't think you know what Beaver is, but like.
No, I don't think you know what Beaver is. One's a car salesman.
Yeah, Jonesy's a therapist. Jonesy's the professor. H is the therapist. So I'm like, yeah, same shit, different day. Like, oh, real, you got to go to the salt mines and fucking hit that fucking rock. Like, what are you talking about? Like, your life doesn't seem that bad.
No.
I do like that aspect. The fact that they have this gift of this psychic gift, and yet, like, their lives aren't really that much better. That's a great Stephen King aspect.
Yes.
Like basically like they might be superheroes, but they're just kind of fucked up. Like
it's exactly like they, that's a great way to put it. Like they're also just as fucked up as any of us. Like just because they might have a little extra, like I can find your car keys in this puddle, but then that lady's just fucking freaked out. Like you would be.
100%.
You'd be like, okay, like, bye.
Fuck, Pete, in all your 30 years of living, I don't know how old the character is, but they never taught you tact or how to be, like, you know, subtle.
Subtle. Don't scare the woman. Like,
yeah, anybody would be scared. She probably think you fucking pickpocketed her.
But I would. I'd be like, okay, this creep threw my car keys in a puddle so he could try to go on a date with me. Gotta go.
Like, gotta go. Like, what the fuck? Like, how? Like, come on.
Yeah.
You know, like you're as subtle as a fucking hammer. Mm-hmm. H's character, which is suicidal, which is kind of cool. It's like, which is weird that he kind of scares himself after he tries to commit suicide for like the first time. Jonesy, he's dealing with his own fucking issues, which I don't really think they touch on. But for some reason, Jonesy's the only one that's explored in his mind. His memory warehouse, even though they're all supposed to fucking have it.
They're all supposed to. Yes. But Jonesy's the strongest one, I guess, is what we can make. I don't know. Like, that was kind of my interpretation of it. Like, because Mr. Gray, the alien.
You mean if they're gay? Like, not even to mention that, like, really, dude? Like, you didn't fix that part for the movie? Like,
yeah, you're like, if they're gay, Mr. Gray, what are we talking about?
Dude, that first half of that, I'm just rewatched it. There's like a love connection, or he's like, either that or just like Morgan Freeman's got a hard on for killing aliens, is the best way I can put it.
Just killing in general. He's like, it doesn't matter. He's like, we gotta get rid of no. But no, yeah, because like, okay, so Mr. Gray, the alien, like, infiltrates Jonesy because he has the memory hardware or whatever, but you're right, they're all supposed to have it.
Yeah, because all right, so really that's why I'm like, I start to lose it in this movie in some parts, because Beaver, played by Jason Lee, is doing great. Fucking Jonesy brings up the memory warehouse and how he has to, like, he's memorizing everything. And for those who don't remember, the memory where he's able to visualize all of his memories in a warehouse, and he's able to almost in his head physically store things in certain places so he can get to them later, which is great. You know, it's a great concept. Should have been explored so much better. But then all of a sudden, Beaver's character is just like, what do you mean your memory warehouse? I know we have this psychic connection and everything, but I can't remember this whole thing we've been doing for the last 20 years. What the fuck are you talking about? Yeah, I just forgot this major concept for this movie for exposition. Get the fuck out of here.
Yeah.
Sorry, it upset me so much.
I agree. And then, like, the whole, like, part of where we're visually seeing Jonesy running around in his memory and like hiding files from Mr. Gray. I was like, I don't know. There were so many that took me out of it.
Could have been explored a little bit better.
Yeah.
It could have been cool if everybody had it.
Yeah.
Seeing different versions of the memory warehouse, you know, like people's different one. I totally think you could do this better.
And then why not incorporate, like, again, like with the memory houses, incorporate it, each one of their memories, because you know they're different. And then maybe Mr. Gray having to, because like they just, one by one, they get, you know, killed until, but again, like, but Jonesy and H are like the strong ones and have to like save the day,
I guess. Because then after Mr. Gray is introduced and then it becomes a chase scene and it just becomes a very straightforward action alien movie where everybody's got a race to the aqueduct or whatever, or the dam, before Mr. Gray puts a worm inside the river that goes to Boston. Yeah, the water supply. And then they all spread. And then Duddits is just like, oh, you know, it only takes one. And then later it's introduced. Later you find out that Duddits is also an alien, and that's why he always knew about Mr. Gray, and that's why he gave the boys the power. Because I mean, I also like to think that, like, in Duddits's world, very much like, I'm gonna get real nerdy here for a second, like Dr. Manhattan from Watchmen. I don't know if you ever saw that series or ever read that book. Was he perceives time? He perceives all time at once. So I feel for like Duddits. Duddits always knew Mr. Gray was going to come.
Yeah.
And he always knew they were going to save the world. So he's, to him, they're like simultaneously happening, which is, you can all kind of understand like how powerful Duddits is. It's kind of cool.
But we don't get enough of the Duddits story. And then the alien fight with Duddits and Mr. Gray happens in about 2 seconds. And then they're like, cool, we did it. I'm like, wow, that's it? That's the end?
That's it. Yeah, he grabs him and then he just like
stabs
absorbs him and everybody disappears and then
I know, I'm like, I thought this was going to be a little bit more of a challenge, but okay.
Yeah, Jonesy and H look at each other and they're like, "Cool, man.
Thumbs up. Let me just squish this worm because we can't have that, you know, getting to the water." But then I also just have a lot of issues with the containment in general. But, you know, I don't want to, like, go in depth.
Yeah. All right. So like Morgan Freeman's whole like, oh, we have this whole section in quarantine. We're going to try to keep worms from going into the water supply. Are you fucking kidding me? Yeah. World is doomed. Like that is not happening. Like,
bro, the worms getting into the water supply is like the least of your worries when you have like animals running around, birds, like how many people left the containment before they even realized, like there's just, it's just.
The, not to mention like there was a, we glossed over like, basically an alien battle that happens out in the middle of Maine for like a second where Morgan Freeman and Tom Sizemore lead a helicopter, a fighter jet expedition over these aliens, and they start to shoot everybody, and it just a big explosion happens, and you think the other characters would have seen it like a couple miles away.
Exactly, because they're right by this town, and also like when the fuck did this alien ship land? Like that would have been a thing.
Like that would have been a huge, like drones over New Jersey. Like think they would have seen it.
Just drones everywhere outside all the time now. And now we're just kind of like, what's happening?
That's Yeah. So what I was going to try to tell you was that Castle Rock did some really good interpretations of some Stephen King work, right? I can't remember what season one was. Season one was like, it kind of just took place in some of Stephen in Castle Rock, one of Stephen King's settings for some of his books. And it was very Stephen King inspired. Season two was actually taking some of those characters from his books and kind of like reinterpreting some of those stories, like the character from Misery and Salem's Lot. Like basically if you watch season two of Castle Rock, it's basically Salem's Lot and Misery kind of mixed together a little bit.
Cool. You need to watch that. You could I have
watching this, like going through this now, I have hopes for Dreamcatcher. You can do a season three of Castle Rock with Dreamcatcher, with the friends in the cabin, with the fungus everywhere, mm-hmm. with a subtle alien invasion, with emotional trauma, with all those aspects, a military outfit, you know, like Men in Black situation. You could totally do this by making it creepy and more subtle and building it over several episodes. I'm like, it's there.
You're correct. It needs to be built properly. This one-off 2-hour movie doesn't do it justice.
Oh no. At one point I was like, this fucking movie's going on forever. Like
it does. Like you said, the first part of it is like intriguing and interesting. You get into it. And then after a while, you're like, Jesus fucking Christ, like looking at my watch, like what's happening?
I can see why you didn't rewatch it. I can totally see why you're like fucking over this fucking movie.
I was
movie.
Like, I don't need to rewatch it. And I'm not renting it. Like, I'm paying. Because it's not on any of the free services right now.
Usually we recommend it, but I don't think it's available anywhere. It's $4 on Amazon Prime right now.
Don't rent it, anyone.
No, go watch Lawnmower Man, the director's cut. That was
You recommend that one.
Go watch Maximum Overdrive.
Even better. Oh. If you want a shitty Stephen King movie, there are better.
If you want a shitty Stephen King movie, you have 49 other titles that you can watch. There are about 50 book to movie adaptations or miniseries or book to media adaptations, not to including ones that either were adapted by or inspired by. So there could be possibly more. And not to mention, they're still coming out with them.
Oh, of course, because he's Stephen King. That's the next thing I was going to say. He's Stephen King. He's a name we all know. He's a horror genius. So no matter what he does, everyone's always going to grab onto it. And just like any work, any artist, guess what? It's not always going to be great.
fire. All right, mind you. Yeah. I'll give you that. But like so when I was telling you about how he made that quote about the toilet.
I think he's correct. I like that quote.
It's good. It's a really good quote. But then he followed it up with like, when I see this movie tomorrow, I really hope it's good. I'm like, Oh, you should have watched the movie first before you made that quote.
Yeah, like, and he's like, I need to go see the movie that's about my book. Hope it's good.
I was like, I don't know if he was just doing it for the camera's sake, but like, and yeah. I also noticed like in the last few years, he's also made like really good, like, recommendation, like, oh, I love this adaptation. Oh, like, he really loved the second adaptation of The Shining that was made for TV. And we all saw it and we were like, oh, this is awful because Stanley Kubrick's a cinematic genius.
Yeah. You're like, that's one where we're like, no.
And he cut out the parts that maybe didn't work for your book to movie adaptation.
Yeah.
And he upped the tension. I'm like, I just think that maybe since it's Stephen King, like, people are more afraid of doing that because it's him.
Maybe. Yeah. Maybe that's a good way to look at it. But like, The Shining is one where I'm like, just let's not. Unless it's The Simpsons fine. Shining, which is also fantastic. Yeah.
Let's not get sued.
The shin.
Yeah. Like, what was it? Dr. Sleep. You know, which was a fine adaptation, even though it was done by Mike Flanagan. Like, it wasn't the worst movie. It was pretty good.
Good. I like his work. So, yeah, I can see that.
But it's actually interesting because, like, you kind of associate Mike Flanagan with Netflix and, like, these sets, yes. And you could sort of rewatch Dr. Sleep and you could be like, it has that same kind of Netflix feel, but I'm just watching it in the theater. I'm like, okay. It didn't give me like movie, like top tier movie production budget when I was watching Dr. Sleep in the theater. That could have just been me though. But like I said, that wasn't even that long ago.
No.
Tall Grass. He wrote that one with Joe Hill, his son. He's still like turning them out. It's really impressive, you know. But yeah, we'll go watch one of his other many other books.
Watch movies. Just watch a different one. Listen to this podcast and just imagine it, and then watch a different one.
Yeah. Pet Sematary remake, awful.
I agree. I can keep going.
I'm sorry.
We can just keep going. There's so much Stephen King. Like, we don't have the time.
Yeah, we don't have the Pet Sematary, you know, what is it? Bloodlines? Awful? Which I already talked about with you before, I think. It was so bad.
Bad.
I was really excited for it.
I know.
Well, we'll leave it there.
Yes.
Thank you, Courtney. Any final conclusions?
I think we summed it up. Go watch a different Stephen King movie. Don't waste your time. Sorry, Lou. I know she really enjoyed this one, but it was only fun because we watched it together.
Yeah, watch it with some friends. Yeah. Watch it with your own losers club. And like, you know, play a drinking game if you can. Or, you know, play a slapping game every time you see a shitty worm on screen. Or
if you watch, they say, fuck me, Freddy. Gross worm creatures, watch Slither.
Oh, fair. Look at that. Good rec.
That one's better.
Bringing it back around. Mm-hmm. 100%. We'll see you guys next time. Thanks for tuning in.
Bye, guys.
Follow us on all the social medias on Instagram because TikTok might be taken down soon. We are now on YouTube to see our lovely faces.
Yay!
If you want to see it. But we're also mostly just on Spotify and Apple Podcasts. And if you want to give us a like and a follow, that'd be great for the algorithm. Even though we hate asking for it, but yeah, sure, do it. Why not? You do it for everything else. So just like,
come on, guys, come on.
Yeah. All right. Talk to you guys later. Bye.
All right.